Home is what you take with you, not what you leave behind.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you the reviews, the updates, the brutal honesty that you really want on all the books that the internet is hyping up. If you're busy like us, we will help you figure out if it's really worth your time to read it. I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. And this week we are doing kind of a throwback because this book came out in 2015, which is wild to me, but it's won a lot of awards. It's very well recognized and it continues to like stay at the top of many fantasy readers' list of like their favorite books that they've read. It's The Fifth Season. And the book is complicated. It follows an Earth-like, Earth-adjacent world where they have these things called fifth seasons, which are apocalyptic events that cause the world to devolve into factions and trying to survive. Like, it's a very survival based world because of earthquakes and volcanoes and very natural like earth functions. And they believe like Father Earth is punishing them. And then they have these seasons and that's how they kind of go about their civilization and calendar, is by these apocalyptic events. And you're following this woman at the start of the book whose son has just been murdered by her husband because she is, and he is, or he was, a mystical, magical person who can control the earth and earthquakes and kind of can feel the earth. And you kind of follow that story as that first last season begins and destroys the main city of this civilization. And it's a very complicated book to explain, but basically just kind of follows the geopolitical experience of these civilizations and how they interact with these magical people that are treated as non-human second-class citizens and how they have a huge role to play in the formation of these civilizations and the world in general.
You won't know what's happening for the first like 30% of the book.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. It's like world building, like from scratch, like, and you get like breadcrumbed until you finally put it all together.
Yeah, there's no contemporary comparison for this book.
Right.
No. Also, part of the reason we pursued this is because it was the only fantasy book on that bogus New York Times Best 100 Books of the Century list. So, you know, we got to see what that fantasy book is, since no fantasy we read was on that.
Yes. Well, do you guys have reviews?
I'm going to read two. Just like last episode, I'm going to read a longer one and then a funny one. So, a 4-star. I won't lie, I was confused for a good 75% of this book. I don't even think I fully understand the world or any of the terms, and I wasn't able to connect with the characters that well. One thing I actually liked, when I thought I wouldn't, was the use of second person POV. But shit, once I realized what was going on, I was so shocked. There's a point where this book became satisfying for me, right near the end, and I read it so fast because I was so confused and wanted to not be confused anymore that I ended up mostly enjoying it. Anyway, I can't give it 5 stars like I wanted to, and I don't know if I'll continue the series, but I'm glad I read this.
Wow.
That's a mood.
That's pretty accurate. Anyway, 4.5 stars, asterisk, stares out my window and up into the night sky.
I love that. That's
an amazing comment. Yeah,
that's exactly how this book makes you feel.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a 1-star, and it's quick to the point. It just says, why would you call binoculars long eyes, but not call geometry shapes math?
That was my review. Oh, my God. It's such a good, funny one because, yeah, they have some really weird words for things that we have words for, and then normal words as right. well.
Also, they're like the pseudosciences.
Yeah. Yes. Because of
astronomy.
Like, yeah. That gives you guys a little taste, because it basically alludes to like previous societies where all the knowledge was lost. And the only thing that continues on is sort of like language and these distant inklings of like what has been. And so there are like lots of words that are just like new words for old things.
But yes, shapes math should 100% be geometry.
All right. Well, the overall Goodreads rating is 4.3 out of 5. And the overall Amazon rating is 4.5 out of 5. Personally, like, I think that's really high for a book that's like kind of hard to read. I mean, mm-hmm. it's not like I really liked it, but it's not like easy, quick, light read.
You not only have to learn a new world, you have to learn the history of this new world. It's insane. Mm-hmm.
And you're learning it out of time and asynchronous.
Yes. And you are learning things as the characters learn.
Yeah. So really, are you learning things? I don't know, but you figure it out eventually.
Yeah. Anyway, where did y'all come down?
I give it 4 stars, and I want to give it more like 4.5 because I want to give the author so much credit for literally creating this world out of nothing. Like, I cannot think of a single contemporary author that similar world. And most fantasy is kind of just replicating off of each other in the present right now. I mean, everyone's just trying to replicate Sarah J. Maas and that kind of world building type style. But this is just so unique. And I love politics, and I love the idea of like history and sociology and how this world basically just builds on top of each other and tries to ignore what they're built upon and pretend that they are the ones that know the best and are superior. And the politics of it all is like amazing. And I loved all of the character perspectives, which is kind of a shock because normally I don't like changing character perspectives. But in this book, loved all of it. The only thing that gets knocked off for this book is because of how long it takes you to get any payoff. I mean, you have to really invest some brain power at the start of this book because you're just kind of like, it's in second person, which most books are not in second person. So you have to get used to that. It's flipping around. It's messing with time, but you don't totally know if you're messing with time. It's messing with space. It's messing with basic physics and geometry. Like, you kind of have to really invest brain power into figuring out what the hell is going on and what this world is and who these characters are, which sometimes I feel like was going a little slow and there could have been a little more payoff. But I love what the author did, so I don't want to dock them too much for it.
So going off of what you're just saying, I also gave it 4 stars. And it's because I really liked it, because I love any complex world building fantasy book. Like, I will put my mind to it. But I'm not totally sure what the payoff was supposed to be. I know where we were supposed to be going, but I don't think we got there in this book. I think it's going to be in the next book. And that kind of irritated me that the only payout was the plot twist at the end. And I was like, but why did we go all through all of this? Look, I like the ride, so it's not a 5-star for me because I'm just not really sure what I was supposed to get out of it.
No, literally, Caitlin, I had to Reddit the answer to this ending because I was like, wait, what?
I totally got the ending, and I figured that out halfway through the book, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm just not sure why we followed this journey. Anyway, it's a very, I don't know the word. Nebulous thought process I'm following. Anyway, I just couldn't give it 5 stars, so it's 4.
Well, I love being the highest. I gave this book 5 stars. I fucking loved this book. I loved everything about it. I feel like it rewired my brain chemistry. And like, I agree. I actually don't think there's payoff in this book. Because if you read closely, you probably figure out all the twists before the ending.
Yeah.
But
all except one. One got me.
Yes, one got me. The rest of them I understood.
I don't we'll think get there. Got me, but now maybe I'm not thinking of it. But anyway, I loved it so much. It is plotless, but it's crazy that it's plotless because the world building is so fascinating and you're following these characters. So it feels like there's a plot, even though you have no idea what they're building to the entire time. I thought it was so masterfully done. It's so unique. This is the first time I've been like really excited to read a fantasy book in a long time because I do feel like I've at this point read so many retellings of SJM that this book was just like so unique, so exciting. Oh.
Very refreshing.
The author yes. did so much just like totally unique world building, stuff I've never read before in my life, like characters I adored and was obsessed with, like just tons and tons of stuff that I was so enwrapped with. Every single time the chapter changed, I would be disappointed because I wanted to read more of the previous perspective, but then I would be excited because I really wanted to read the other person's perspective. So I was like, this book had me in a chokehold. Like, I loved everything about it, loved the magic, loved the politics. But I think what really made it 5 stars for me is, for me, I felt like I figured everything out at, like, the perfect time. Like, the beginning is confusing, but the author is, like, so, so masterful at, like, spreading everything out at the perfect moment and explaining things at the perfect moment and having the explanations of the world coincide with, like, realizations about the characters so that everything is just, like, this really, like, cohesive, beautifully done narrative. And so I am so excited to read book two. I'm like obsessed with this book and so many morally gray characters because everything is just about survival, right? Like it's like the world with no frills because they're constantly waiting for the world to end. So everything is about survival. And I can't say enough good things.
Yeah. There's really interesting moments in the books where there's interlude sections and that's when you learn a lot and it foreshadows to future moments. And it's the weird moments where you're in third person then suddenly, because it's just like, it's right. Zoom out.
Yeah.
And there's like history texts incorporated and
lots of references to Christianity and like, it felt very realistic to me almost. Cause there was like, enough vestiges of our world that it felt like a continuation, but you can also tell that like this is a society that has lived through like multiple apocalypse. And so I was obsessed.
Well, we have talked about how you are not sure what time and place you are in for any of the three main point of views for most of the time. Does that affect your decision on, do you think it's more plot or character driven?
No, it's character driven.
It's character. Yeah.
I was going to say, I could not tell you what the plot is.
Apocalypse.
No, I liked it.
The plot is survival. The plot is actually just basically explaining the world to you. Like,
yes.
And also like there are a few key questions you want answered. So you're reading to find those answers.
Yeah.
I have
you
never
get them in this book. I don't think so, but
yeah, I have never read a book. Specifically a book one of a series that is just entirely world building. That's it.
The whole thing is
I have building. And it's gonna be my book wreck.
Oh, okay.
I'm so interested. But yeah, I felt like part of what's intriguing to me about the way the book is set up is the fact that no one really understands anything about the world. Like everything is like a totally different style of government than like exists or like has really ever existed, because they've adopted this like very loose structure to everything. So there's not a real government, like there's no real like nexus of knowledge and power the way there is in our world. And so it's not like our world with modern technology where everyone knows everything. There's the internet and everything is very like standardized because they've lived through so many apocalypses. Society is built to be flexible and decentralized because you can never tell when things are going to fall apart. And so the characters
are non-human or extra human actors, which totally
throws
into things.
But because of these apocalypses, no one actually even knows the history or the backstory for anything. And that's part of why the plot is to figure out the world, is because most of the characters actually don't know the history of the world. They don't know why these like non-human entities are here. They don't know when they arrived. They don't know how the government works or like who's in charge. Like these things are actual mysteries, like not just to us, but to the characters. And I think that's just a super fascinating setup to make the plot of your book to understand the world the characters are in.
Yeah. Like majority of the things that the characters learn is through lore, which is already put out there as it may not necessarily be true. It may or may not like actually happen. And then specifically stone lore, which is like things that are etched into stone about how to survive, because those are the civilizations that obviously survived at least one season, one apocalypse. So you can get through that. Let's follow their guide, because that obviously worked for them.
Mm-hmm. But they don't know the reasoning or the science behind like almost anything. It's like going to a world that still has like insane levels of technology, but like no one knows how it works, and you just have it based on
no one's looking into it either.
Yeah, there's no science or meaningful investment in intelligence and like study, and professors are treated like crazy kooky people because they're just so used to like an apocalypse happening and everything being lost that no one invests in that or cares about it at all. The only thing they have is stone lore.
Okay, I'm going to slow your roll.
Sorry, I'm getting so far into it.
I know. I love it, y'all. But also we got to get that into the spoiler section.
I know.
I mean, not that you spoiled anything, but...
No, I get you. We need to...
Let's talk about another topic that will interest you, being would you read other books by the author?
I haven't before, but obviously the answer is yes for me.
Yeah, I haven't read any of her books, but... I may pick a book too. It's a lot. It's an investment, I think, and it takes some time.
So I've downloaded book two. I have not started it. However, I read the summary for it and I was kind of like, what? I don't know. And then I saw a review that said, I wish I hadn't read the rest of the series. It was like, this book is so good. And the next book ruined it. So now I'm like a little scared.
Oh no, I'm scared.
That's scary.
Anyway, you should read the summary of the second book, because I was kind of like, do I care?
Yeah. Oh God. I really care. I actually really want to read the second book, but that does scare me because I have been betrayed by books I loved before, where book one was really good.
Yeah. And this is an investment in your time.
Yeah, it is.
Speaking of, how long did this take you guys to read?
I think it took me 5 days. I mean, I loved it. I was obsessed with picking it back up. So I don't personally have an issue with the pacing. It feels way longer than it is, but I actually mean that in a good way. Because it's only like 550 pages, I think. But there's so much in those pages that it feels like it's like 1,000 words long. And I actually wish other authors would take note, because to me, if you're going to write a long book, this is what it should be like. Like every page should be worth it. It should feel like you're putting a lot into it. And so, right, like this was sort of my problem with Pyre of the Orange Tree, is it just felt like a lot of superfluous pages. This book is only 550 and it like accomplished what an 1,000 word book or 1,000 page book could have done. So yeah.
Goodreads says a little less than 500, so 468, but
yeah,
it feels, still, yeah,
it
feels so longer.
Yeah.
It does. So I have a weird reading experience with this one. I bought it over the summer as like a buy one, get one at Barnes & Noble for fantasy. And I started it like the first like 25, 50 pages and then like put it down and didn't pick it back up. And it's not because it was bad, but just because it was convoluted and complicated and I had a lot of other things to read. So then when we set out to read it for this episode, it only took me 3 days. So I did get, like, once I hunkered down and officially set time aside for this book, I could read it. But I don't know if I would have read it as quickly if it weren't for a deadline.
So Goodreads says it took me just under 2 weeks to read this. Not because I didn't want to read it, but because I was short on time and trying to also read Chain Gang All Stars, this was reprieve from Chain. I'd put down Chain Gang and pick up this one.
To be honest, it's a nightmare scenario. Like, I could not have done that.
Like, this was sort of an escape, despite being complex, from the heavy topic of Chain Gang. But I didn't feel like it was too long. I thought it was well-paced. I just didn't have a lot of time to sit down and chunk it out all at once, or else I probably would have.
Nice. Would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
Yeah.
Yeah, great TV show idea.
If you could figure it out, yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm going to surprise you guys and actually say no. And the reason is because, A, I don't think you can do that, like, have a, like, as plotless of a show. Like, because in a book, you can really breadcrumb people to put together the world. I think that's a lot harder to do in a show. And I also just don't know that I would want to watch that. Because I don't know, I just feel like that storytelling style is a lot better suited to books, and I feel like the world is so unique and incredible that it would take so much investment to just not make it weird and cheesy on screen. But
just my world's opinion. Half of Game of Thrones is just them standing on a wall or riding between cities.
I literally was totally about to say Game of Thrones.
And I still don't know what, I mean, the point is, do you want the throne? But the whole, like, how many seasons for 8? That?
Yeah.
So there is an interest out there.
All right. True. But I'm hesitant. I'm hesitant to think it would be good.
I understand. You're protective. You like this book.
Exactly. I'm protective.
I will say.
The perfect word.
The writing style, I don't know if is super conducive to screenwriting.
Oh, and that second person really just
fucks with you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, now we have our busy girl rating.
Oh.
I can go first because I feel like you guys will have a sigh of relief when you hear my rating. I gave it 5 stars quality. I am like between a 2 and a 3 star for
business. Okay, good.
Okay, yeah. I thought my 3 was going to be shooting low for you. Yeah. So.
No, I think I am going to go with a 3. Just because I think it's worth it, but it's a hefty book and you have to like commit to reading it in order to understand it. And so I don't know. I don't think that's the best type of book for a busy schedule. Like I read it over Thanksgiving, partly when I was sick. So I was home all day, and perfect read for when you're sick at home because it's super interesting. You bang through it. It's complicated. I think if you're really busy, you might just want to give it some time and like pick up a easier book to read.
Yeah, I give 3. This is I would classify this as an epic fantasy, aka you have to start from scratch. Mm-hmm. So picture Lord of the Rings or Brandon Sanderson, like you know nothing. You are figuring out your context. So it's not for everyone, but if you're picking up an epic fantasy book, you probably enjoy that kind of thing. So I'd say a 3.
Yeah. I think I'm going to agree with y'all, but I am teetering at a 2 as well. So I think I'm going to give it a 3 because I think it's worth it. And I think it's a very interesting book, especially if you like fantasy. But knowing my reading experience where I started it and then had to restart it because I just didn't remember what I had already read. You have to actually close read this book. This is not one you can just like skim through and it's like fairy smut. This is actually like hardcore.
Are you telling me you didn't listen to it on 2.5 times speed on audiobook, Catherine?
No, God.
No, I did not. Actually, I listened to it on 1.5 times.
Oh my God. I couldn't even listen to this. I had to reread so many little pieces.
I have an Audible subscription, so I sometimes supplement audiobook and hardcover as I go and like flip between the two when I'm like busy, because I've been kind of busy this week. So that's why I was listening. But I was listening on 1.5 times, which is just like normal talking speed, not actually like super fast. I could not listen to this super fast. This was a lot.
Okay, well, we're finally to our portion. I'm obviously literally so excited to discuss this book. the second after I finished it, I have been desperate to talk to you guys about it. So if you're one of our listeners, all right, think about it. Figure out a time when you're going to be bored this Christmas season and read the book during that time and then come back to this episode, because this book is worth it. There's only a few twists, but figuring out the world along the way is a really exciting and interesting journey. So you should not let us spoil it for you, and you should read it yourself. Okay, question one. Catherine's exact wording in our doc is, let's start with the setting because boy, is it different. So one of the parts that I really, really liked about the book is the sort of only vestige of religion is stone lore. And it's kind of like loosely based off the idea of the Ten Commandments and like writing the most important rules of society down in stone because everything else will be destroyed. So, and then at the start of each chapter or the end of each chapter, maybe you get a little piece of stone lore, and it's sort of written like the Bible, where it kind of polices like the moral and practical outlines of life, with the idea being how to survive an apocalypse. And the fifth season idea comes to you in one of these like stone lore bits, where there's like this like bit of like basically poetry, and it's like, you know, fall, winter, spring, summer, like summer's first, fall's the second, and then the fifth season is death. And so
I actually just pulled that up because I was going to reference it. So yeah. Winter, spring, summer, fall, death is the fifth and master of all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super poetic. So that's the moment where you like fully understand the title. And this book is supposed to be about, the very beginning tells you that it's about the time the world ends for the last time. So we're supposed to be reading when Earth actually like collapses, destroys itself, caves in on itself. There's no more society after this, because the premise of the book is that the world has ended multiple times because they've lived through many of these mass extinction events. Anyway, what did you guys think of this concept of seasons? And so seasons basically then refer to civilizations that develop in between periods of mass death.
Once I figured it out, it was fascinating. And then it would briefly explain different seasons where like, oh, the water was toxic in this one, or this crop died during this one, which caused this. Like, really interesting.
Cannibalism in another one.
Yep.
Yeah. What? Every book, guys.
We read a lot of books with cannibalism.
Yes, we do.
Guys, stop writing about cannibalism. It's 2024.
But this book, it's not gratuitous. It makes sense.
It does. It makes sense in a sick, twisted way.
But then what takes it farther is that by the end of the season, they still crave flesh, which is gross. But it sets up the dynamics between the Raga, which are like the magic people or Orgeny, and humans. And
is that how they said it on the audiobook?
Orgeny?
Oh my God.
I was reading that Origine.
Yeah, same.
Well, Origine would be, yes, that's correct. That's the official.
Oh, Orgeny is like the. Okay. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I was pronouncing that Orogeny.
Yeah, same.
Maybe I'm remembering it wrong. I don't know. There was a lot of words.
The audiobook is probably correct instead of Casey and I's brains.
Yeah.
There were so many. There were so many words that I was like, what the hell? Anyway, it's very interesting to see like the dynamics between the Raga and humans, quote unquote, because like they're like, you're not human. You're less than. But then it's the Umeni civilization that's like anti these people, but uses them to their own benefit. But then there are other civilizations that they don't talk about, and they haven't like taken into the fold who utilize them to save themselves, because they can control these ripples and can control these necessary like tsunamis and stuff like that. And which is very interesting, because it's like this idea of if Earth is truly this volatile, why wouldn't humans evolve to be able to live through this?
Well, okay, that's what I was going to ask. Did you guys catch when it alluded to that the Orogenes might have this kind of extra developed organ that gives them their cecipine.
Yeah.
So I think it's alluding to they're actually like further evolved humans.
They are. Yeah.
Yeah.
At least that's also what I read.
Is this book sci-fi or fantasy by the end? I'm not sure.
It's sci-fi. But sci-fi and fantasy have so much in common that it's like kind of both, because there's also like magic, basically.
But is it magic or is it extra organ?
But there's like something. A sciencey explanation for it. Yeah,
I know.
I mean, there's also stone eaters, which is just that one I magic. Can explain.
Yeah.
Aliens.
Yeah. I mean, they're literally just aliens. So they just operate on their own logic. But yeah, I love the history of the past seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I have learned that I really like books that are post-apocalypse, that are based on our world, but look very different. And like our society has been demolished. Because I also love they reference these like old structures and old dead technologies. Civs. Yeah, that are just around.
I'm going to start calling Rome and stuff like a dead civ.
Dead civ.
dead civ. And how like it just happens so many times that they're just like, for us, ruins are fascinating because the idea of like humans being eliminated and the vestiges of their society still existing is like fascinating. And for them, they're like, oh, yeah, there's dead civs and their dead technology and stupid shit everywhere.
Well, we're not always living on survival mode. So we have the time to write down history, put it in books, learn that history and appreciate these ruins for these civilizations and for this culture. They don't have the time to do that. They kind of have to say, just
these people aren't here, so that didn't work, so we don't care.
Yes, right. And it's basically ignoring and building upon those civilizations, so they're just kind of living on top of each other in order to survive. So yeah, it's very interesting how the ruins play in effect and how still, even in the apocalypse, history can be perverted by the people at the top and changed to fit their own narratives and to keep themselves in power, which also is still interesting.
Yes.
Who is at the top? Who's in charge of the Guardians? What does the Emperor do?
I still, by the end of this book, don't totally understand the Guardians' powers. Like, I'm still very confused by their smiling faces and them going absolutely insane in the brainstem.
They have a chip or something.
Yeah. There's something weird in there.
Yeah. And that's one of the mysteries I'm still really invested in. And part of why I liked this book is because the characters don't know, so you don't know. And it's
right when she realizes she doesn't know who's in charge of the Guardians, she's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
I never thought about it. And now I'm scared.
Right. Like, who are the powers that be? It's crazy, but it also makes sense for the world that she's created that, like, no one knows, right?
Well, even just imagining a guardian that's like this smiling face coming at you with like, quote unquote, love, but malice, like breaking your hand. That is not love.
And like a child's hand.
And like they have this idea that the Raga are like these very evil people naturally that they have to tame. And so it's just so fascinating because I'm still confused by their magic system. I don't know if it's magic because obviously the Raga aren't necessarily magic. They're evolved humans. So then why the need for the Guardians? I'm hoping that gets explained in the rest of the trilogy, but it just makes everything like the layers upon layers of each of the politics, the magic systems, the civilizations, and even the seasons themselves is just chef's kiss, flawless.
And Catherine, I do want to say, like, I also really appreciated the reference to the way that like parts of stone lore that these powers that be didn't like would end up being changed and revised, and how like the kind of overarching society of like the stillness would ignore societies that live differently because it didn't fit in with their idea of how to survive. And so they would just kind of ignore them and like shut them out, like this island that they eventually end up on. And it's on a fault line and it shouldn't have survived all these catastrophes, but it does. And part of it is because they actually empower like Rogas to help them survive instead of isolating them and using them as this like control mechanism. So yeah, it was just very layered.
What did you think of? So part of the layering is you're in three different time periods. You just don't know what order they fall in until close to the end of the book, but the three POVs end up all being the same person in different parts of her life. So it's like a child origin. You know, it's kind of how you get the inner workings of the political system. Mm-hmm. And then it's origin training. Well, no, that's her too. Cyanite is the other one. So it's Denaya. Cyanite is a working member of the Fulcrum and the society who's realizing society is maybe more evil than she thought and finds this island where they're living out of it. And then you have Essen experiencing the end of the world. So you're like, you're just trying to figure out where this end of the world falls in all this until you realize it's just her, the same person through the years.
Right.
When did you figure it out and what did you think of that construction?
I figured it out fairly quickly because when you read the first chapter from Demaya's point of view, it talks about many winters ago. That's like the chapter header. So I was like, okay, so this is in the past. It's not obvious that Cyanite is in the past. That one is more murky. But once I kind of figured that Demaya is Cyanite, and then I was like, okay, well then the logical conclusion would be that Cyanite is Essen.
Yeah.
And so I was just kind of like, I'm going to go with that assumption as I read. And then once it was confirmed that Demaya changes her name and that is Cyanite, that's when I was like, okay, my hunch was correct and we're moving on from there. Cause I'm like, okay, this now is starting to make sense in the timelines. We're filling in the gaps of the timeline.
I'm kind of with you. I had a hunch like shortly before it confirmed it. And then I was like, well, if A plus B equals C, then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I was actually super proud of myself because I feel like I'm actually not good at figuring that kind of stuff out. And I figured this one out really early, like for sure in the first half of the book. And yeah, there are just like just a few clues, but like one of the big ones for me was the use of the word raga, which is technically a slur. And so Cyanite starts using it because of her mentor, because he is like responsible for like breaking her like complacency with the system with what is like basically slavery. And so he always uses the word raga because he, you know, feels like it's meaningful to not dress up what they are. Like he thinks like they're slaves and they should like refer to themselves as slaves because that's what they are. And so that was a big part of the chronology for me, is that then Cyanite starts to use the word raga all the time. And then the last perspective, I forget all of their names, but
Essen
always uses raga. So I was like, okay, this is like her journey. But I thought that was so interesting to give us three different perspectives that are all the same person and not explain it. And like, you have to like, the mystery is that it's all one person and her life circumstances forced her to be like three totally different people. I loved that.
Well, and had you read it chronologically, I'm not sure it would have been as interesting because half the fun of the book is trying to figure it out. Figure out the timeline. So if it's all in an ordered timeline, you're kind of like, yeah, I'm interested. But I think somehow it made it better. The second person POV for Essen, really interesting. Because it's kind of like she's being reminded who she is. And then in that makes sense. But
well, and then you realize at the beginning of the book, she says, I've been going by many different names. And you were just like, oh, I should have known from that first chapter.
Right.
Yeah. But the usage of you in the narration is very, you're like, whoa, hey, why are you talking to me? But
yeah,
it's not talking to you.
Well, then it makes sense because it's also not necessarily from Essen's point of view. It's also Hoa's point of view. And he's kind of telling the story of their connection and him coming towards her in the obelisk and then finding her.
And he's been watching her.
Imprinting on her and apparently may or may not eat her. I'm not entirely clear on that. Kind of gross.
Yep. Okay, so before we get to Hoa and all the other strange creatures, I just want to know which was your favorite portion of her life, which name like, which identity did you enjoy the most of this woman?
I love a snarky woman, so it's always going to be Cyanite.
I also liked Cyanite until they were on the island. Then she got kind of boring, but
yeah.
Yeah. That is probably one of my main actually critiques of it, is I think the period of time where Cyanite is comfortable is actually a little boring. And it's the only part of the book for me that doesn't have a lot of like tension and motion behind it. But I don't know. That's actually a really hard question for me. I actually really liked when she's a child. I really liked learning about how they trained in Orogeny. And I think you get a lot of the backstory of the lore there, about how they see these people and also like stone eaters. And you kind of get introduced with these sockets that we like never really understand, but have something to do with the obelisks. And I don't know. I really liked her as a child because she was clearly very smart and was figuring out how to maneuver in this system. And I really liked that. But honestly, I really liked all of the perspectives.
Yeah, they were all great.
More because she's figuring out what she's been taught is not true and coming into her own powers.
It's more it's questioning authority and questioning reality and less like survival. Because both of the before and after perspectives, her childhood and after, is just survival at that point and living within the system or outside of the system.
The thing I really did like about Cyanites was that it does show you how much of what you're told you just kind of believe. And I really, really liked that a big part of that was the limits of Orogeny. And actually, what the limits that were imposed on them were totally made up. And no one really understands the science of how it works. And they just like told them like myths about how things worked so that they would be like more easily controlled and that they would be more functional instead of actually like discovering like what the limits of their capabilities were. And I thought that was just super interesting, like her figuring out that actually things extend so much farther than what they're taught was really interesting.
The people who do seem to know what goes beyond what the Orogenes are learning are the Stone Eaters. They appear out of rocks. They can travel through rock. They just kind of step out of the rocks and eat the rocks and maybe people. They're very bizarre. And we come across a few throughout the story. Two main ones and a couple others. But what did you think about the Stone Eaters, especially Hoa, who you kind of come to, like, love?
He's
kind of a little pet.
Right.
But also, like, he has sharp, pointy diamond teeth.
Yeah, like, because he's like a little boy when he appears, and, like, he obviously has a fascination with Essen, and especially after the trauma she just experienced of her son being murdered by her husband, he comes in at the really right time for her needing some kind of healing or like that kind of sun energy. But then once you get to the end and you see like the Stone Eater has been eating alabaster, I'm like, is that what he's doing? Is he claiming her to eat her? Like, I'm like, maybe I shouldn't be rooting for this Hoa dude.
Is that why they're so like territorial with each other?
It's like they seem to each have their own
human
raga.
Right.
Yeah, I think they're an interesting concept. I still don't totally get what their purpose will end up being other than chaos agents currently. Like, they save Alabaster at one point, and Hoa just kind of, also, the whole time I was like, you have met, once you figure out that she was Cyanite, you're like, you have met a Stone Eater, stop being in denial, you know Hoa is a Stone Eater, like,
yeah,
just get on with it, lady, how dumb are you?
yeah, it is.
She's not in her right mind, though.
She's in denial.
Right.
She's like, I know something's wrong with him, but I'm gonna think about it later.
Yep. So I liked the Stone Eaters. I do think that the most interesting parts of the lore in the book are like the past societies and then the kind of structure of orogeny and how they're like controlling the rogas with this like sort of like weird like power structure that no one really understands or is aware of. And then the Stone Eaters almost feel like this weird curveball that you're not sure how plugs into anything. So I'm interested. Like, I think as creatures, they're really fascinating. And it there has to be some kind of like connection because like Origins have this sort of connection to stone and magma and the earth and can use their power to like move and restructure the earth. And then Stone Eaters like eat and like easily walk through the earth. So I'm really interested because it seems like there is, right, like this weird connection between them and we don't fully understand what it is. But the obelisks for me are really the question mark because, okay, the obelisks somehow connect to the sockets and the obelisks also connect to the Stone Eaters. But why the obelisks like trail and form connections with specific origins seems really random. Also, why do they land? It's like all of this stuff is like... Well,
it seems like they're cocoons for those Stone Eaters. So I'm pretty sure Hoa was in that obelisk.
Oh, he was in like following. A crystal. I pictured like a geode, though.
I think he was in the purple.
The amethyst obelisk. Yeah. And that was following her.
Well, I missed that part.
And he says like, oh, yeah, I've been following her and now's the perfect time. And I'm like,
And then I kind of interpret that maybe because Alabaster has pushed his power beyond where any of them have gone before, that's why he used such great power to cause the end. Mm-hmm. That's why he is maybe turning to stone.
Right.
But why is his little pet Stone Eater eating him? I don't know.
So weird. I'm really fascinated in it, but the whole Stone Eater thing is like almost just like in the periphery. And I feel like I'm still like,
I feel like they're the key, but also we don't know how to unlock that.
Yeah. And it is still, oh my gosh, just the fact that they don't have knowledge and don't question anything because they're so used to being in survival mode is crazy. Because Stone Eaters are like a known thing. It's not even like crazy to them that Stone Eaters are real, right? Yeah. Like they're not walking around like, what is this creature? Like they know they exist, but somehow they know nothing about them. And that is the weirdest part, actually.
No, it's crazy that they don't question it.
They're treated different from the Raga because they're just so unknowable. In the Raga, you can figure them out enough to control them.
Yeah, right. It's like, don't mess with those creatures.
Because Raga are still human and Stone Eaters are like definitely not and also very powerful. But I also just, I'm really fascinated in why the Ragas can use the obelisk's power and like what that does to them. There's so much that they set up to.
Alabaster's basically like, have you figured it out yet? And I'm like, no, I have not.
Alabaster, is incredibly frustrating because he just never explains anything.
He's awesome. I love him.
I love him, but like incredibly frustrating. Yes.
So I want to ask you a few questions about figuring things out. So obviously, I didn't figure out that Hoa was in that purple thing. Might be. When did you figure out that Alabaster was the one who created the end of the earth?
This is another one that I was very proud of myself for figuring out because I figured it out when he stopped the node child that almost destroyed the world. When he stopped that destruction, I was like, oh my god, so he's the one who actually like ultimately like destroyed civilization.
I kind of thought it was gonna be their son Korra. Once I realized that the Stone Eater had like this obsession with him, I was like, well, that's who's standing next to this person at the beginning that's destroying the earth, so it's Alabaster.
I had like a slight inkling, but I'm not gonna lie, I didn't really put it together. I kind of just accepted it as quote unquote Father Earth. And then that was who I thought it was. But then, once it was revealed, I was like, oh, that makes sense. That makes more sense. But like, I was like, then who's the Stone Eater? Cause then the Stone Eater says like, we're not going to do anything. Don't worry about us.
Yeah. But also It's so intriguing because the Stone Eater, like Alabaster basically asks if the Stone Eaters are going to just take over the Earth. And the Stone Eaters are like, no, we're not interested in that. And I was like, then why are you here?
Yeah, no. The Stone Eaters were like, don't bother. Like, it was just kind of like, yeah. Okay, what do you mean?
Okay, so I have two more plot twist questions. Yeah. One of these is the one I did not predict. And obviously, apparently another one I didn't know. When did you figure out that Tonki and Binoff were the same person?
Did not. I did not figure it out.
That's the one I never, I was like,
totally off guard.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, wait, what?
Right. No, I did not see that one coming whatsoever.
Yeah. So all these people have just been following Essen this whole time and she never knew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, girl. Yeah. All these stalkers, figure it out. Yeah, that was a cool plot twist. So then at first I thought Tonki was the one narrating the second person until you realize it's Hoa.
Right.
Okay, here's the last one. When did you realize this planet doesn't have a moon?
Very quickly.
Oh, Casey's face says
he
didn't.
I never realized that. I
know that's the whole point.
Have a moon.
That's the entire point of why it's unstable.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's Earth without a moon.
Not put it together.
So there's this one interlude that's talking about observing the cosmos. It's talking about the sun, the stars, the whatever. It says, but what you should look out for is what's not
it's missing.
There.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, they never named the moon.
Yeah, that's they're crazy. Like, these. We're focusing on these obelisks and we're focusing on the stars and we're looking up. But like, it's all pseudoscience. But they never ask what is missing. And I was like, it's the moon, isn't it? It's the moon.
And then at the end, that's why he says, have you ever heard of a moon? It's because they don't have one.
And that's why they have destructive things happening, because it's Earth without a moon. So you have no tide control. You have no like tectonic plate control. It's very interesting.
That is super interesting. I'm like, wow, totally over my head. I would never.
Well, so at least I got that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why he cracked the Earth, is because he's going to create a moon off of the Earth.
Okay, yeah, I still don't know how that's going to work, but.
Well, he's not going to do it, obviously.
He's
not, he has no arms.
Right.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Wow. So interesting. I'm glad y'all told me that.
Well, that's what I had to Reddit. I was like, wait, how? Because like, I was like, but then just ending of have you heard of a moon? I was like, but how does a moon fix all their problems? Like, I was like, I already knew a moon was missing. But then I like was like, oh, moon, tides, duh.
So I was ruined by this book series in middle school. You know, we loved those like post-apocalyptic books in middle school.
Yeah.
So it's called Life as We Knew It. And an asteroid hits the moon and knocks it off its normal orbit. And the world, volcanoes start erupting, the water rises. So I like am weirdly acutely aware
primed.
Of that.
Yeah, prime.
I'm like kind of obsessed with the fact that the moon controls the tide. That's why when people are like, we're gonna build on the moon, I was like, do not mess
do
with
not
the
know
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's so the end is Alabaster says, have you heard of a moon?
That's so crazy, because I honestly just like chalked that all up to him being kind of crazy and was like, we're just going to get into this in book two. Like, I'm not concerning myself with what this
you're means. Not getting it into it in book two, though, because book two is from her daughter's point of view. That's why I said I am way less interested.
Oh,
my
yeah,
jaw
no.
dropped. For those of you who couldn't see my face, that
her jaw really drop has her jaws dropped a few times.
Yeah. Well, also learning
that the moon.
About the moon. Yeah. And also what happened to the moon.
Tonight, we steal this moon.
Wait. So, Casey, why did you think the cliffhanger was?
Well, I mean, because there's so much that they still haven't figured out.
I thought
about
it was
the
Stone Eaters eating Alabaster's arm.
Yeah. Well, yes. But I just thought it was like, she's not giving us what we want. Like, she's not giving us the full explanation. We're not figuring out the Stone Eaters. We're not figuring out the powers that be. We're not figuring out how society is going to survive this, right? Like, I was just like, the world is going to end. So, like, and we don't have any of these questions.
Because you're looking at what there is and not what there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so true. So true.
I'm disappointed neither of you got my Despicable Me reference.
I know, I got the Despicable Me reference. I just ignored it.
Thank you.
Fascinating.
We still didn't touch on a lot of stuff, like how the entire population of the island and her lover died, and it was very sad, and she drowned her baby. But
that scene was so crushing,
heartbreaking.
So she's had two babies die.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It makes at one point she said two. She said there was reference made where it sounds like there are four. And I read it multiple times and I was like, am I reading this wrong? She said like something about the first two failed and then the next two. So I don't know what that means.
Oh, well, Alabaster and her were talking about another kid toward the end of their stay. And she was talking about how she wasn't on any sort of like they were very careless with birth control, essentially.
Right. So there's a chance another kid pops up, too.
Huh.
Interesting.
Also, the fact that Alabaster's kid was in the node, sick and twisted.
Yes. So dark.
And also just the forced breeding made me so sad. And like,
yeah,
I really think that's what really humanized Alabaster, though, because you figure out that he's like doing everything he can to make things easier for the children.
He's also gay.
And he's gay. Yeah, he does not
forced to do this. Yeah.
Yeah, he does not want to be with a woman at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, love
also Alabaster. This was, I think it was a Hugo Award finalist, and it's because all like race, gender, sexual identity is so fluid in this book. Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
Yes.
Groundbreaking fantasy.
The description of skin tones and how that impacts like the breeding. Like what's bred necessary, because like there's an entire just subclass of workers that are just breeders to breed in like good genes into this population. And then how
but
like
the good genes are not white.
Yes.
And the Arctics are the white people, but they're all like, we ignore them.
It's very interesting. There's so much to talk about, but I feel like we focused on the fantastical elements because that's the exciting part of the book.
Yeah. Well, that's like the mystery part as well, which is like the most plot there really is. But also like this like academy for children was super crazy that they like trained them all in.
And like shipped them off to the nodes if they failed.
Right. Yeah. Which was so scary.
And they all have their own guardian who kind of just knows where they're at all times.
Right.
And but also, these other guardians that can like make them explode themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also
and go crazy
and fear towards the Rogas, even though society like objectively really needed them to survive. Like
yeah, you can't see the evolution that's in front of your face.
Right.
No.
Or you can, and you're just not telling the people who are the evolved species that they are the evolved species.
Yeah. Because it's like my brain would say, I would want to befriend the person that could quiet the earth.
Right. You clearly like the node maintainers and things.
Right. That's what has allowed their society to exist, in fact, is their
humanity is there because the fulcrum is there.
Right. It's very interesting.
The only thing that I don't have answers for are totally the obelisks and why they are created.
Stone eater eggs.
Well, that's what I assumed they were stone eater eggs, but 4K.
And why was that one dead and broken, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
And it caused a super volcano?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's
lots of questions. Will I read the second book? Unsure. I don't really care what Nason has to say.
I am learning that it's told from her daughter's perspective does actually change a lot for me because we get so much of her and like three different versions of her life. And I was really invested in that plot line. But
that's why I said read the summary. But I didn't want to say it earlier because it's sort of a spoiler. But
right. But I don't know. I'm interested enough that I would still definitely read it. I'm sad to hear that that's the last we'll hear of Alabaster and
They come back into play, but I think the main POV is her daughter.
Interesting.
But it is called the Obelisk Gate. So obviously we're going to get some answers on those damn obelisks.
It might be worth reading just for that.
Yeah.
I knew it was going to be like the focus of book two, and I'm very excited. And also perhaps they'll have a moon by that time. Like, who knows?
Maybe the obelisks are mini moons.
I don't think that was the... Well, there could be one giant obelisk that's a moon.
I'm just throwing random shit out there.
Because Alabaster's like, he destroyed Eumenes to like bring up something.
Yeah, the obelisk gate.
Yeah, which have you heard of a moon? I don't know. I'm not very well versed in astronomy, but.
Yeah. There we have it. This scratched my itch in my brain, so.
It's very boy fantasy written by a girl.
Yes.
Yes.
I loved, and I also, I don't know, I have realized more and more that I really love books that are like sort of fantasy and sort of sci-fi. And so,
speaking of my book rack, The Will of the Money, there are also obelisks.
The Will of the Money.
Yes.
Hold on, I have to look up. Oh, okay. I just like forgot for a second. The Will of the Many.
The Will of the Many is also like a post Earth with some weird dead civ technology that they don't understand that also happens to be obelisks. But it's like Roman era. We did an episode on it. It is like my current favorite fantasy read, I think. But it also like reads fantasy and ends up being sci-fi.
Yes, also true. Hold on a second. I need to go through my previous reads.
I know I stole the best one. Sorry.
That's the most obvious one. Yeah. Ooh, This Is How You Lose a Time War.
Yeah.
Very similar kind of like jumping backwards and forwards in time, even though it's linear in telling, not linear in time jumping. But I think it gave me similar vibes.
Like a tenth of the length, too.
And a tenth of the length. And it's, I don't know, like it's definitely like a new world building.
I think the book that I'm thinking of is Ender's Game. So that book, I read it in high school. It's by Orson Scott Card, but it is also science fiction, and it's sort of about a post-apocalyptic society, but the whole time you're not exactly sure when, and there's all this like technology. It's like another book where you kind of have to figure out what's happening, and it's very sci-fi-ish. Also, I feel like for the second week in a row, I feel the need to mention The Future. And I think I'm also actually going to give a shout out to a book I read like ages ago as a kid. But The Giver is the science fiction for children book. And it actually like has some fucking hands. Like they made it into a movie.
It's dark.
It's really dark, even though it's technically written for children. And it is another book where they're in this like future dystopian society, but you have to kind of figure out what's going on, and there's like a twist ending.
I think there you have it. We gave you a lot of recommendations. Thank you, Casey, for all those.
You're welcome. It's because there's no book that is like totally does what this book does.
No.
I'm trying to think of another book that scratches that itch, and I just can't.
No. I mean, this book is completely unique, and that's why it's in a runner-up or award finalist, award winner. It's gotten a lot of hype and press. But yeah, if you enjoyed this episode, interact with us. We're at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. We'll get these recommendations up on our website, busygirlspod.com. And if you disagree with us or you have more to add to this conversation, yeah, just give us a shout. I mean, we love to interact with any listeners and learn more about like different kind of perspectives, because that's what makes reading fun. But yeah, with that, I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.